go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome everyone to this episode of Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Review Podcast, where we break down the latest, possibly not so greatest, episodes from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So, Chris, I was watching something interesting last night. Show called Unexplained, hosted by William Shatner.
Oh, nice.
And for those of you who are going to be like, well, where is this going? Well, it's a little on topic given, you know, what our show's about. And we're currently covering Star Trek Discovery. So there's already a connection with William Shatner.
Pseudo-connection, but yes.
But I was watching an episode where they were talking about the 2017 interstellar object that looked like a giant turd.
Yeah, I remember that. That was, yeah, everybody thought it was a UFO.
Yeah, and I was watching the show, and they were kind of saying, you know, some astrophysicists and astronomers were saying, you know, it kind of seemed like, I mean, they're not ruling it out of the realm of possibility of being alien visitors because of the extremely weird path it took to get to Earth and the path that it took getting out to Earth or going away from Earth, you know, the odds of a comet or any object like that coming in from outside of our solar system and pretty much coming within, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand miles or a couple million miles of Earth and then like doing an about face and turning around is just the odds and probability are so astronomical that it would just be weird for this to be a natural phenomenon instead of some, you know, alien foreign object.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the weirdest things that nobody ever talks about in the craziness that is 2020 was that we got to learn a lot more information about UFOs and aliens. And it wasn't just, you know, conspiracy theorists or new videos. This was like the Pentagon and the Department of Defense dropping this declassified information, you know, so, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibilities. I think, what was it? I think an Israeli prime minister, or no, it was an Israeli
space administrator or defense minister or something like that.
Yeah, like they're equivalent to the head of our NASA department for the Israelis. Came out and said there is aliens and that humans are just not ready to meet them, so they are. That's why they haven't made contact, but they say that there is aliens, and that's not me. That's like a head of
former head of a department in the Israeli government,
right?
And yeah, I've seen that. But this whole episode was just on UFOs and kind of how everything's changed with them. You know, their interest in nuclear weapon sites. They've been spotted over those sites a lot, and it just kind of gave a rundown of the Roswell, New Mexico incident and current day, kind of how the public opinion on these matters have changed. And there's so many new sightings, especially since everyone has a cell phone in their pocket nowadays.
Mm-hmm. And I mean,
it's just crazy to think about.
It's not beyond the realm of possibility that, you know, the atomic bombs drew in, you know, extraterrestrial life. I mean, it is a huge monumental step that we took in innovation when we did that. I mean,
not only that, I mean, they're so, it's such a powerful and destructive device.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. We only used a fraction of what it was truly capable of.
Oh yeah. Couldn't imagine if someone unleashed like the hydrogen bombs or even some of the newer nuclear weapons.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The biggest bomb ever. Can you imagine that? It was like a hundred times the size of the one dropped on Hiroshima or something like that, and it was an insane amount.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
yeah, they're crazy, crazy weapons and crazy tech. But yeah, I just thought that was interesting. It's somewhat related to our show, especially since we're talking about Star Trek Discovery. I thought it would be a nice little cold opening for our show.
Oh, yeah, it's always fun talking about aliens. Oh, my gosh. If we ever have more time, well, hell, we could do it more often. Come up with some new research or find some new sightings and talk about it. That'd be a fun kind of cold open.
Always good. Always good. I'm sure there's whole other podcasts dedicated to alien sightings and stuff like that.
Oh, no doubt. But
no doubt.
I don't mean we can't talk about it.
True.
It's still fun to talk about.
We just did a little bit.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I say let's get into this week's episode.
You can do it. You can do it all night long.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on. I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm going to go do it.
So what have we got in store, brother?
So this time on Deep Space High, we are covering episodes 7.
Where's 6, 8?
7, no,
oh,
hold on.
Wait, 7, 8, 9. That's right.
7, 8, 9. There we go. Oops.
Took you a second to get there. There we go.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, because I was thinking about we're on part 3 of season 1 of Discovery, but that covers episodes 7 through 9, which we'll talk about 7, because that's an interesting episode, and it was the... oh, ever so popular time loop episode.
Yeah, I mean, I like time loop episodes because it's always the concept of it is always so fun. Like, what would you do if you knew that the ship was going to blow up and you had 30 minutes and you could start over and nobody else would remember but you? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I don't really care for time loop shows and episodes. Especially because, I mean, we've seen they're all very similar. I mean, there's a whole show.
Pretty cliche. I mean, they were creative at the times, but it almost seems like a reoccurring theme nowadays.
Yeah, but I liked most of this episode because it wasn't told from the perspective of the person who's re-experiencing the time loops, or persons in this case. Whereas we were following Brenham. And we, you know, the other characters who were experiencing the time loops and the time dilations and everything, were trying to convince everyone else that this shit was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was fascinating to watch, because you don't always see it from that perspective. You always see it from the person experiencing the time loops and trying to convince everyone else they're not crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
I like the little different take. I liked Harry Mudd in this episode. I mean, this episode just felt... a little out of place.
A little bit. I mean, they made Mudd out to be more of a villain, more intelligent villain than just kind of I'm trying to think of the best way to put it to describe him from the OG series. More just of a...
over the top?
Yeah. Not as flamboyant, you know, over personality-wise.
Yeah. Not the sharpest tool in the shed, but not the...
yeah, I mean, they should have had that wife at the end when, or what do you remember what her name was? Stella. That Stella should have came out and just started barking like crazy, yelling at him like a, you know, pissed off wife at the husband. Like, oh, that would have been funny as hell.
Yeah, to give a brief explanation of the plot, it's essentially Harry Mudd is... out of prison from a couple episodes ago, and he has this time crystal and is essentially in boarding the Enterprise and trying to figure out what makes the ship so special.
Discovery.
So he could sell. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Shit. Yeah, the Discovery.
Wrong ship.
My bad. Yeah, but he's boarding the Discovery, trying to figure out why it is so valuable and trying to sell that information to the Klingons. And so he does this 50 or 60 times, and he kills Lorca every time, which is interesting, but I guess he's holding a grudge since he left him in Klingon prison.
I mean, it's an interesting way to work out your issues. That's for damn sure.
For real. But another person who's also experiencing every one of these time loops is Stemmon, since he was injected with tardigrade DNA. He's kind of living outside of the normal time that everyone else on the ship is.
Yeah, he can... it's almost like a interstellar, to where he can step outside the three dimensions and kind of beyond time and beyond our understanding of space time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because, I mean, speaking
they
of
They go
dimension,
to it a little bit more. Well, they don't go into it more, but you kind of get a visual of what he sees in these next couple of episodes.
Yeah, and one of the things was, because Brennan was saying this shouldn't be possible, how the hell is he doing this? Even though he has a time crystal, they mentioned that there's a fourth dimension species that had to have most likely developed this technology to where he's able to go into a time loop. And I was like, that's interesting. I've seen people talk about two-dimension species, but a three-dimension or a four-dimension species. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Deep Space Nine, the wormhole aliens are extra-dimensional beings. I don't know what I'm not entirely sure which dimension. I know they're beyond the fourth because they're beyond time, so they're past the fourth dimension, so at least fifth-dimensional beings. I don't know how well your understanding is beyond the fourth dimension or the different dimensions. Or
no, my audience. What is that, quantum mechanics or whatever? That's all miles above my head.
I don't know. Fourth dimension still gets me confused because fourth dimension's time. Time is the fourth dimension in our equation. We can only see snippets of, you know, our reality, which is our perception.
And that's what
time.
She's referring to, that a fourth dimension species had to create this device using a time crystal that allows him to make this loop over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it just, I've never heard it before in Star Trek universe. And honestly, time loops are a little played out in the Star Trek universe. But then again, it's one of those things to where if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know?
Yeah. Well, like I said, like I was saying, this is one of those where, I mean, at first I was like, oh, great, this is a time loop episode. And then you realize it's not from the perspective of the people doing the loop. So I liked it a little bit until about the halfway point. And then it started to lose me, and then it picked up a little bit, and then the ending fell flat.
Why do you say the ending fell flat?
Well, I was just, the way Burnham and Stemmons and Tyler kind of set the trap, I was just hoping the Stella and her dad would be a little more pissed off and not like finding a lost puppy all happy. I wanted to see them furious and angry because that's how Burnham and Tyler kind of set it up as he just kind of, you know.
Well, I'm trying to remember Stella. Why does that, wasn't there an episode? I need to rewatch the OG series. I haven't watched it since last year. So I think there was an episode where Mudd got a hold of like a technology to where he could create his own androids, and he could create it to where it looked like almost human, and he would create beautiful, nothing but beautiful women, and he had an entire planet. Yeah, and then you just got stuck with he ended up getting stuck with his wife, and it was just versions or copies of his wife, and they were just reprogrammed all of them to look like his wife, and his wife just constantly nagging at him. That's what I would have loved to have seen, you know, from that.
I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure that was Mudd, but I don't remember off the top of my head. I smoked a lot of weed today, and that was a long time since I've seen the OG series, but I'm pretty sure that was a Henry Mudd episode.
Might have been.
I don't know. I'll rewatch it before I watch 10, and then I'll let you guys know.
I like how at the beginning of this episode, Stemmons was, he just seemed like he was super high.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. I love that.
Either
too.
On shrooms or weed or just shit-faced out of his mind. He just seemed like he was on cloud nine, and I was like, this is
on
a
top
cool
of the
side
world.
Of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a stark contrast compared to the dickhead that we saw in the first couple episodes.
Yeah, we did mention that last episode. And, you know, Lieutenant Dickhead does come back a little in the next episode. But
Lieutenant,
I'm liking the actor and really seeing his range. It's pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he is a pretty good actor.
Because there was a moment. Oh my, so, like, in the party, how the episode opens after Burnham's monologue. God, I couldn't think of the name for a second. Her and Tilly are talking, and Tilly's talking about, you know, she's going through this musician phase, but she used to like soldiers. And then Tyler gives a speech, and she's like, well, maybe I'm back into soldiers. Well, they pay that off later in the episode when Stemmons comes in is trying to get Brenham's attention. So he tells Tilly, he's like, oh, I just ran into the hottest guy and he's a musician. He's over there. And then Tilly bolts. Yeah. I was like, oh man, that's gold. That's, I didn't catch that.
That is funny.
So there was some good, nice little comedy in there too, that were, it was subtle and it worked. And it was kind of tying back to conversations had in previous time loops.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely getting better. Not to skip ahead, but I definitely thought that 8 was an improvement, and a lot more Star Trek-like. So, I mean, the episodes are definitely getting better as we're going along.
Well, yeah, to go off that, 7, 8, 9. 7 was definitely more a self-contained episode.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really do anything to advance the overall plot of the season. So some might say, hey, it's a filler episode. Well, yeah, technically it is a filler episode, but...
That's honestly just normal Star Trek, though.
Yeah, it felt a little more Star Trek.
Yeah, more situational single arc storyline or single episode arc storyline.
Yeah.
You know, to where...
8 and 9 tie together a little bit, but they still have some self-contained aspects to them.
Right.
Continue talking about... The magic to make the sanest man go mad, which was the name of episode 7.
Was that really the name of the episode 7?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, magic referring to the time loop, and then the sanest man go mad is Mud/Themons who keep reliving the time loop and kind of losing their shit a little bit.
Well, I mean, Mud seemed more just to get bored from it, where Themons was just irritated or didn't want it to, or was ready to end it. He was tired of the killing.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was weird to see them develop the character or to have the character development, but end up taking all the development away in the last time loop. Like, because apparently part of the way that Simmons uses Michael to or convince her that the time loop's real is she tells him something that only she would believe, and that's she's never been in love, and apparently she's fallen for
I was hoping it'd be like she's had a crazy threesome with Vulcans or something weird like that, but
yeah, or something, you know, a little bit simpler, like I'm a virgin or something like that. That'd be pretty easy to,
yeah, but she probably didn't want to explain that.
Probably.
What if her secret was, I'm not really a mutineer?
Yeah, right.
I didn't do it. I'm innocent.
Yeah. I'm a victim of circumstance. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. 7 was...
But yeah, you got a point where they took away that character development, because you do see them develop a lot. Even, you know, Themons, Tyler, Tilly, they all kind of... You even learn a little bit about Lorca, and to kind of see that all gone... I mean, not completely gone, but you know, they took like 3 steps forward and then like 6 steps back.
Yeah, right. I mean, at least they all know about it to where,
which is
I
just
guess...
one forward step, which is just 1 step forward, 2 steps back. So I don't know why I used 3 and 6.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know what I was thinking, but it shit happens.
But I mean, it was entertaining. It was an entertaining episode.
It was.
It was better than some of these other episodes, where it's just like I'm not even paying attention to any of them.
Oh, so. Yeah, and Rainn Wilson, who plays Harry Mudd, he was just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really liked him in this episode, and I don't think we see him again in this series.
I don't know. Probably don't not, but we... Well, there's season 3, they go into the future, so we would only see him in season 2.
I don't think we see him again in this series. So I have liked them, and if he appears in some other show or somewhere else, that'd be cool to see, because I think he did a fantastic job playing Harry Mudd.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, he's not as flamboyant or as obnoxious as the original one, but then again, that 60s acting is hard to compete with.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, he did a pretty good job.
And I think Mudd only appeared in one episode of the original series.
I don't think so. I think he was a reoccurring character. I think he was in a couple of episodes. Yeah, he was. I just don't remember all of them off the top of my head.
The only one that sticks out is the one where he is trying to pass these ladies off to the male members of the crew, but they're like de-aging or whatever. So they're made to look super young and beautiful. And then
Yeah, that's an early episode. One. They're but he's also old. In Tribble in Paradise because he's the one who sells him the tribble that starts all the tribbles.
Oh, does he? And you see one on Lorca's desk. He has a tribble.
Mm-hmm. So
I wonder if that's where he gets the idea.
Maybe. Maybe. But
because yeah, he was in his artifact room. Oh, speaking of Lorca's artifact room, I liked how they explained some of the shit they had in there with Harry Mudge just using the different tools to kill Lorca and other members of the crew. One of them being like, what was it, dark matter balls? So they were like little balls of weaponized dark matter that you would throw at someone, and he said it was like the most agonizing way someone can die.
Oh, I'm yeah. Like,
that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that was, but I mean, he did say that he had a, you know, he liked to collect the weapons, that he was a weapons collector.
Well, yeah, Lorca did, but I liked the payoff of seeing what some of those weapons can do, because, you know, he also had a gun where, you know.
Oh, yeah, you can't show off the collection yeah. and not give a demonstration.
Yeah, because he's, yeah, I mean, Mudd was like, oh, what does this gun do? And then him and Lorca are going back and forth. He's like, oh, I'm out of time. Better figure out what this gun does, and then shoots him. And just annihilates him, kind of like the Klingon weapons do to most people.
Yeah, which, again, I don't know why they're so destructive, but okay.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I guess so. I got a question for you, though. What do you think of Jason Isaacs so far as Captain Lorca?
I like him.
You think he's doing all right?
I think like, he's does playing he play the part very well, yeah.
Okay.
I think the only thing that bugs me about him is there's, I don't know if it's him or the writing that he's given, but there's just times where he's like, oh, get to engineering. He's just like, go, go, go. And it just doesn't seem right. I mean, there's certain lines that he has that just, they fall flat and seem very out of place. But other than that, I think his acting is good. I liked him. I liked him in Harry Potter. I liked him in this.
And, the accent's kind of bothering me, though, because you can kind of tell he's British and he's... But then again, it's kind of... That's almost nitpicking, because, I mean,
I think that's his normal voice. I don't think he's...
No, he's British.
Oh, and I know he's British. But I don't think he's hiding his accent. I think that's how he normally talks. He might have it down... I mean, he might not have as thick of an accent on the show, but I'm pretty sure that's how he sounds most of the time.
I mean, he's got a thicker accent on Harry Potter.
It's been a while since I've seen a Harry Potter. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to go
watch it, because I mean, I've seen him in Harry Potter, and he's also in The Patriot.
Yeah,
because he played a British soldier in The Patriot, or British colonel, I should say.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's kind of why I want him to play Thrawn, because I figured with the British accent, it seems more like a.
Oh, Thrawn will definitely be a British actor.
Oh yeah, the British just make better villains. I mean, everybody knows that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a conversation for another day.
Oh, well, you can't have a James Bond kind of movie without a stereotypical British bad guy, you know?
Well, James Bond is British anyway, so.
Every movie's better with a British bad guy.
Yeah, but given that, we won't get in there. But yeah, okay. I like Jason Isaacs as Captain Lorca, and I like him in just about any role he's in. I don't think there's anything I've seen with him in that I haven't liked.
Yeah, agreed. So, just one of those. Yeah, he's just one of those guys to keep an eye out. You know, his name's been heard rumors that
yeah, it's been tossed
he could
around
be playing Thrawn.
Yeah, there's like five people that I've heard who could be playing him, and he's
I don't know. He's
one.
He's personally, yeah, he's my preference. That I kind of hope he gets the role. A lot of people want Benedict Cumberbatch. I get it, but I'm not a he's in enough roles as it is.
So overall, how did you like this episode? Good, bad, ugly?
It was good. Wasn't too bad. It's nice. It felt a little bit more Star Trek, honestly.
It definitely did. And if yeah, definitely did.
And it was nice to have that, you know, deviation from the seasonal overarching plot. You know, it just get some more realism into the Star Trek universe. And I liked it. So I'd probably give it a 7 out of 10.
All right. So let's talk about the next episode a little bit. I think we discussed last time, but I think this is Latin where it's Si Vis Pacium Parabellum.
That sounds like a fun name.
Yeah, it sounds like I couldn't try to repeat it, so I'm not going to.
I wonder what that means when translated. or what is it supposed to mean in Latin roots?
No idea.
I mean, episode 8. I liked episode 8.
It got off to a good start.
Yeah. I mean, because they were battling, or they were trying to rescue one of their ships. What was the name of the ship that...
I don't honestly remember. No.
No, I don't either.
But they were trying to rescue a ship. Well, it was a ship that was, like, patrolling the outer sector or, like, the neutral zone.
Right.
And they end up losing the ship because, you know, they were out gunned 2-1, or
6-1.
Well, it was 6-on-2.
Well, it was 6-on-1, and then
the ship was so heavily damaged.
Yeah, and then Discovery came to the rescue. And then, yeah, you got to see some spore driving action, combating the Klingon vessels. That was cool.
Yeah, because here you learn the Klingons are kind of fitting all of their ships, or anyone who sides with General Vok or Volk.
Yeah, Volk is apparently he's trying to seize power. And he's using the cloaking technology as his means of attaining it. And basically, anybody who's pledging allegiance to him, he's giving the technology to and outfitting their ships. And it's becoming a concern to the Federation since the
since their sensors don't pick them up.
Yeah, they're getting their asses kicked.
Well, yeah, in the conversation after the Discovery jumps out, and after that one ship is destroyed, he's talking with, I think it's the head of intelligence, the Vulcan admiral, but he's talking with them, and he was like, "How come there was no other ships in the sector who could come assist us?" And that's when the Vulcan explained that the other three ships on patrol were also attacked and killed and destroyed, and that they lost 800 people that day.
Was it 800? Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of people, but
It was like 800 and something people on, I think it was 3 or 4 vessels that they had lost because of simultaneous Klingon ambushes using their cloaking technology.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like, here's the problem with the cloaking technology. The Federation should have already been aware at least somewhat of its existence. Now, I understand that this is kind of the explaining of how the Klingons got it. Basically, that's what this war is supposed to be, an explanation of how the Klingons got the cloaking technology. They've always talked about how the Federation went to war with the Klingons, but never actually saw it. This is the first time we're seeing it. But they knew about it from the Romulans. Romulans already had the technology. So that's why I'm like, why are you so surprised about it? You haven't done... It's just a story. It's a storyline that the writers chose to ignore from the Star Trek universe and just kind of hope that Star Trek...
Well, I think it's one of those...
Not enough fans would know about it.
They had so little encounters with the Romulans.
Well, I mean, that was their first encounter. They actually ran into a mined planet that the mines were cloaked, and they didn't know that, and they were gonna land on the planet until mine blew up, and one attached to the hull, but didn't blow up. So they tried to detach it from the hull, but ended up getting stuck to it. One of the officers, and that's when the Romulans first showed themselves and decloaked and threatened to destroy him. So that was on the NX-01 Enterprise before the Federation, which was about 100 years before this took place. So they had about 100 years of...
They don't really deal with the Romulans much.
Well, not in the... So this is more in the fandom storyline. According to the Star Trek history books and how the Enterprise was going to continue, they were actually going to go to war with the Romulans because they were building that up because... In the Star Trek history books, they did go to war with the Romulan Star Empire, but they never actually saw their opponent because of the cloaking technology, and they didn't actually see what a Romulan looked like for the first time until the original series when they encountered that specialized weapon, Romulan Warbird. But
right, so if it's kind of one of those things, oh, their enemies don't currently have cloaking technology, out of sight, out of mind, now they're being reintroduced to it and having to face whole new problems where they can't track Klingon ships because they're cloaked.
Right. I mean, it's the same.
So I mean, it's
the same technology. It's just coming into different hands. Well, I'm just surprised they've had 100 years of knowledge and they haven't thought about it at all. You know, come up with any defense. Like, you did go to war with an empire that did,
or even try to develop it themselves.
Right.
Because I know at one point they outlaw it, but I don't know.
I think what it was after the war ended, they signed a treaty. I don't remember the name of the treaty, but that treaty is where they agreed to no longer or never try to develop cloaking technology. And then the Romulans went into hiding for like 70 something years, and then they encountered them again with Kirk and the Enterprise, Kirk and the Enterprise, and then they went into hiding again, and then they encountered them again in with Picard and the Enterprise. So they just love the Enterprise.
Apparently. So this episode, as we're talking, the Federation's getting their butts handed to them thanks to this cloaking tech. And we notice that there is an away team on a planet, which consists of Tyler, Saru, and Burnham. And this is where I got a little lost. I mean, I know the planet, they explain, is like each plant and each individual plant and leaf and blade of grass produces its own vibration, and there's this transponder, or what do they call it? I think it was a transponder. Transistor, or a transitor. Whatever.
Close enough.
Close enough. But there's this giant tower which they could use to kind of amplify the sound to get their signal out, and they could use...
Transmitter?
Yeah, maybe it's a transmitter. But they could use that device and kind of make a makeshift sonar scanner so they're able to detect cloaked enemy vessels. That's how they're explaining it, and that's how I'm taking it. It was a very... I don't know, it was a strange episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, but this one actually felt... I like this one because it felt a little bit more Star Trek. You know, one of the landing party gets high on the plants and everything around him, wants to find happiness, and the other's got to smack him out of it.
Yeah, well, I don't think Star it was Trek high, it was more of semi-possession.
It was kind of a joke. It wasn't really a possession. I think it was more of once he gave in and to his sensories, he sensed the peace that was on the planet, and he, you know, I mean, he said it himself at the end of the episode.
A little crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean, he said it himself that he's lived every moment of his entire life living in constant fear, because that's what he was bred to feel. And for the first time, he no longer felt that fear, he felt that peace, and he didn't want it to end. And you know, I don't blame him for, you know, being aggressive and trying to stop him for not wanting to lose that peace, that sense of peace.
Yeah, we learn a lot about Saru and his species, because we find out that
they're fast.
They're able to run 80 miles per hour, which is faster than a cheetah. Huh?
Kilometers per hour.
Did she say KPM? I thought she said MPM or
no,
KPM.
No, that's another discrepancy. Different. Yeah, because they use KPH here, and then in the OG series, they use MPH. They use the metric, or they don't use the metric. And then Next Generation, they go back to the... It's weird.
I thought she said miles an hour, because I was like, damn, that's faster than a cheetah. I don't know how fast 80 kilometers an hour is. That's like, what, 40 or 50?
No, it's closer to like 55, 60.
Still fast. But
yeah, I mean, it is still really fast. It's still as fast as
three times as fast as a human.
Yeah, because the fastest human being, I think, was what, 24 miles per hour, and that's Usain Bolt.
Yeah, I think he runs between, like, you can get him up to like 25 or 6, but that's about it.
It's still pretty freaking fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they have good stamina, so he's able to keep that speed and run for a pretty good distance, because they said he could make the 30 kilometer journey in 15 minutes or whatever.
I thought they said that he runs up to KPH and he can sustain it for up to like 10 kilometers.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember.
Because there was
this was an information overload.
Yeah, I mean, we know that he's a predatorial species, which is kind of crazy to think about it. Imagine, I guess, what would be a good one? A cow, maybe? It's almost like if a cow becomes a sentient species that was almost bred to be food, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like that episode of South Park where they, you know, the aliens invade, they come to the cows.
I think I watched that recently.
Oh my gosh, that was great. That was the pilot, I think. I don't remember. The intelligent species here.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah, it's funny. That's
the pilot.
And then they did a remake on it. That was great.
But there's, you know, more to his Saru species than that. You also find out he has improved hearing, like a dog. Mm-hmm. They can hear more. Better sight.
Yeah.
So, and then they have that, like, sixth sense to be able to feel danger. The coming of death, as he explained in episode 1 or 2 or whatever it was. And then he goes batshit crazy because he connects with the, what were the people called? The Poe something.
It's kind of important. It's kind of Poffins? Important. Something. Poffins. Man, well, I mean, they're kind of the center point of 2 episodes. I guess we didn't write it down.
I mean, I have it jot down, but it's P-O-P-H-E-N or something like that.
Poffins. Poffins?
But I think the P-H is like a V, so it's like Poffins. Poffins.
Poffins? I don't know.
Whatever. It was like a ghost species that was able to communicate with him, which made him turn batshit crazy. And then they invite the Klingons using their transmitter.
Well, I don't think that their intention was ever to be, like, hostile, because I think...
No, it was more... Yeah, it's how Brenham explained it.
Yeah, they wanted to resolve the dispute to bring peace, so they brought both adversaries to the planet, hoping to resolve the issue, but that's not what they wanted to do, yeah. Which was... They just wanted to suppress the transmissions and use it to find the Klingons, not... You know, bring the Klingons there for an all-out battle, and now they were forced to protect them because, based off of not the Prime Directive, but based off of First Contact protocol, they were a defenseless species, and they were almost obligated to help.
Yeah,
because they were an intelligent, sentient species.
This episode also takes place on the Klingon Ship of the Dead, because we see L'Oreal, like the hair brand or makeup brand.
What?
The female Klingon, the one who was...
Oh, yeah.
Her name's L'Oreal, which is L'Rell, but I've been writing it as L'Oreal, like the hair product or the makeup brand. Yeah, I use product association.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. I mean, I do something similar, but that's what threw me off. Like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah, so L'Oreal, I'm just going to call her L'Oreal, like the makeup brand. But she joins the Ship of the Dead, and then finds a way to convince General Cole.
Or at least he's trying to find a way and convince him that she's a valuable member of the crew.
Yeah, and she does that by interrogating Admiral I almost said Cornwallis, but Cornwell.
Admiral Cornwallis.
But Admiral Cornwall, and essentially she helps her escape prison by actually locking her in her quarters, as we find out later. But and then you find out that L'Oreal wants to defect from the Klingon Empire, so they kind of are using each other to get out of the sticky situation.
Yeah.
I like that storyline.
It's a believable one. Because, I mean, Kor, so, you know, I guess he has no real value, or he doesn't really care about T'Kuvma or T'Kuvma's teachings.
Yeah.
I guess the Klingons consider T'Kuvma to be a messiah, to be a kind of a religious figure, to reunite the Klingon Empire. Where Kor is just in it for the power and the wealth, and, you know, he wants Klingon Empire under one banner, under his banner. So he's more taking advantage of the situation than, you know, reinstituting the teachings of their messiah. So if she feels it's more of a betrayal of then that's, I guess that's probably why she doesn't want to follow him, because it's kind of
that. Well, not only that, because he came in, he wasn't even at the Battle of the Binary Stars. Now he's taking over Takuma's ship, the ship of the dead, when he hasn't really honorably earned the ship. So she's a little pissed about that too.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure she is. And then I'm sure she has other hidden motives or agendas, you know. I'm sure it's not as plain and simple as, hey, shit's getting crazy, let's get out of here, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, for real. And then they end up getting caught. So she has to paralyze the Admiral and, like, throw her in her quarters.
Well, they had to make it convincing to where it looked like she died. And
I know, but then in the next episode, you know, when Tyler and Brenham beam onto the ship, she's like, there's a human life sign. If it's that easy to determine if there's a human alive on this ship, how have the Klingons not fucking figure that out?
Maybe they weren't looking for it? I don't know.
I don't know. You would think, hey, there's still a non.
Well, maybe it's an ancient ship. They just don't have those kinds of technology or sensors to sense humans.
It seems like, okay.
Yeah, okay. It seems like, yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah, so. How did episode 8 end?
A face-off. The Klingon War of the Dead warped in.
Right? Oh, yeah, because that's when the planet essentially uses their transmitter to call the Klingons to the planet. Yep, yep, yep. Well, oh, and then another big thing, which is paid off in episode 9, is you kind of see Stemmons reverting back to his dickish self and experiencing some side effects where at one point in time he'll know what he's doing, and then the next second he's lost, kind of like dementia or Alzheimer's, where he's just kind of in and out because of the effects of jumping in, injecting himself with the tardigrade DNA.
Well, do you think it's a tardigrade DNA or it's the constant usage of the spore drive?
I think it's a combination of both. You know, they really don't know how the tardigrade DNA will affect him, and as we find out, it messes with his brain a little bit. And then I don't think the jumps are helping.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because you saw what happened with the, oh, fuck, what was it called from the last one? The giant.
Tardigrade?
Yes, thank you, the tardigrade.
I've only said it like 3 times in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, termite was close enough. So the tardigrade.
No, it was not. It was not close enough.
You knew what I meant. No. The tardigrade, you know, given to the effects that happen with the tardigrade, you know, it makes sense that it's having a similar effect on the lieutenant, where he's slowly losing his mind every time he uses it. And it probably didn't help that they just did 134 micro jumps to around this Klingon warp. Goddamn. Yeah. On this cloaked Klingon warbird.
Yeah, that was in episode 9, though.
Well, I thought we were going to episode
which 9. We'll get into episode 9, which is Into the Forest I Go, which I felt like it would have been a fitting name for episode 8. But whatever.
That's well, weird. Well, then again, we don't know what the Latin translation is for the episode, so maybe it is a fitting name for it for a while.
I don't even know if it's Latin.
Well, what is it? It is. Yeah, do you have it written down? Or do you have it in the notes?
I can Google it. What I bet if it? I Google it, it's just going to come up with season 1, episode 8 of Star Trek Discovery.
No, just hit translate before it, and then copy paste whatever it is, and it should translate.
Ah, so it is Latin, so I got that right.
Okay.
Translated, if you want peace, prepare for war.
Oh, okay.
So that makes a little more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Okay, I revoke my comment from saying that Into the Forest I Go should be the title of episode 9.
No, yeah, I agree. I think that's an apt description for episode 9 and 8.
So speaking of 9, as you mentioned, because of the cloaking technology, Starfleet Command wants Discovery out of there because they don't want to lose their prize ship to the Klingon Ship of the Dead. So Lorca's idea is, we'll just limp along at warp 5 and to Starbase, whatever, and they can expect us there in 4 or 5 hours. But I have no intention on reaching our destination. So he's like, you motherfuckers better figure out a good plan so we could beat this cloaking technology and, mm-hmm. and help these people.
But I mean, that would make sense why, God damn, I say that a lot. It,
yeah,
you but say it does it, make all yeah, the fucking time, but it does make sense on why they didn't want that, you know, that transmitter to amplify or sent that invitation to that planet, given how close it was to that base. I mean, at 3 hours away at warp 5, that's pretty damn close. So
no, yeah, it is. And it's one of those, it's just one of those episodes where Lorca is going against the wishes of command. So their bright ideas to put sensors on and then perform these little itty bitty 130 some odd jumps to gather all this sensor data on the cloaking as the warbird is cloaked.
Right.
So
they snuck.
So they could build an algorithm and whatnot. So they snuck Brenham and Tyler on, which is where you're going, when they decloaked initially, right before the shields are able to come up. And then that's when they discover, oh, Admiral Cornwallis is also on the ship.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost by accident that they found her.
Yeah, it was. And then Tyler loses his shit because he saw L'Oreal, and then his PTS kicked in. Her PTSD kicked in.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I guess he went into
shock. Yeah, which is where we see more of Cornwallis's psychology doctorate coming in handy, since she's treated these kind of patients before.
Yeah. Oh, that was I was actually kind of impressed. That was a really impressive way of her trying to bring them back. Hey, you didn't let them beat you the first time. Don't let them beat you now. Kind of a
yeah.
That was actually pretty smart.
So I wonder if that's how a trained, like a real life psychologist would talk to a veteran with PTSD who, you know, might go through stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, it sounds like it could be, but because neither one of us are trained psychologists or psychiatrists, who knows?
Yeah. Yep, that is fair. But I mean, we could do some research on it and see if, you know, they did bring in any psychiatrists or potentially consult one. If I don't know if either one of us really knows one, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if I went to a shrink, I would ask a shrink.
Yeah, that's fair. Same.
If I ever do, I'll ask.
Okay. Sounds never fair. Know when it's you the first thing.
Never know when you're going to have to talk to a therapist, though.
Mm hmm.
I like the conversation of just how they're world building and setting up, because this episode 9 is the mid-season finale. So we saw this on November 12th, 2017 when it came out, but it was the last episode for like 2.5 months or 3 months. So we didn't know what would happen in 10. And then they leave off with, you know, the mission was successful. The away team comes home. They are able to bring back the Admiral. L'Oreal jumps on Ash's back as they're transporting out. She's now a captive on the Discovery. They end up getting the algorithm for the cloaking technology and dispersing it ship-wide. They destroy the Ship of the Dead. So all in all, this is a success to the point where Starfleet wants to give Captain Lorca accommodations.
Right.
And somewhere in this episode, well, it was right before Lorca asks Stemmons to do the 130 some odd jumps, where he shows Stemmons the data of all the jumps that he has made since he took over for the tardigrade. And right. They talk about possible entry points for alternate universes. And it didn't hit me in 2017 when we first watched it, mm-hmm. but it hit me now. Holy hell.
Easter egg, yeah.
Easter egg. Like, they're talking about the multiverse, the multiverse, i.e., in Star Trek layman's terms, the mirror universe.
Right. Yep. Oh, I know. The all the Easter eggs were there. We just didn't notice it the first time. Like at the end of episode 9, he's like, "Let's go home," and then everything goes to hell. It's like, oh shit! I didn't notice that the first time.
Yeah, it made me think maybe. When Lorca typed in his destination, he really, instead of setting it for Starbase 47, where they were supposed to go, maybe he tried to set it to go to one of these mirror universes, and Stemmons couldn't handle the coordinates he was given, hence where you see all the issues they had at the last couple minutes of the episode, and you cut, like, they're dead in space in an unknown location. They could be in the mirror universe.
Could be. Yeah, they could. I guess we'll have to wait 3 months to find out. Oh, wait, no, it's already up. So
no, that'll be next time on Deep Space. No. But speaking of the mirror universe, I mean, just about every series of Star Trek, with the exception of Next Generation, has had episode or multiple episodes on the mirror universe.
I don't know.
Right? Am I wrong? Maybe. I don't know about Voyager, because I've never seen Voyager. I know Enterprise didn't have a mirror universe. I know Deep Enterprise Space Nine. Universe. I don't remember seeing the Enterprise's mirror universe episode.
Yeah, it did. It was season 4. And actually, it was interesting because Hoshi Sato became Empress. Because the NX-1 was a warship. And Archer wasn't in command. Somebody else was.
No. Okay, yes. Enterprise did, but Next Generation didn't.
No, Next Generation did not. They had to do
that. That's the one I was talking about. Yeah, that's the one I was talking about. But the Next Generation did have a multiverse episode where a bunch of the Enterprises from a bunch of different universes were in a single location. I do remember that because Riker was captain of one of those ships, and they were at war. Was it with the Borg, or was it someone else? They were at war
I know which one you're talking about. The one where Worf kind of breaks the space-time continuum and all the Enterprises end up in the same.
That
universe, they were at war with the Bajorans. So that's where the Bajorans rose up against the Cardassians, who were occupying the planet and ended up conquering the Cardassian Empire. Something like that. Because that was an alternative storyline to that they were kind of with Deep Space Nine. That was an interesting one, though.
Yeah, so each series has had its mirror/alternate universe episode/episodes. And it looks like Discovery setting itself up to have its own, which is fascinating.
Yeah, kind of is. I mean, it's... So, I had a problem with it with... Kirk was supposedly the one that introduced the mirror universe. That it all started with Kirk. Or at least that's how Deep Space Nine explained it. But then, you know, Enterprise kind of already threw that monkey wrench in. But they didn't explain that there was a crossover between the multiverse. They just kind of did an episode about the multiverse. You know, from their... Star Trek Enterprise. Who? What are you at? An owl? Jeez.
I thought in Enterprise they went into the mirror universe.
No, not exactly. A ship went into the... ironically, the USS Defiant, but a different Defiant. It was a Constitution class Defiant, not the Defiant class. supposedly a ship got caught in the mirror universe, and then somebody captured it. I don't remember who it was off the top of my head. And they ended up killing all the crew and using them as slaves. And then the Terran Empire found out, which is Earth, you know, evil Earth. And then they captured the ship, which was from the future. So this was a 23rd century ship in the 22nd century. And they used that ship to, you know, capture the Emperor and eventually Hoshi Sato eventually became Empress. She was the one who...
She's the helmsman.
Yeah, technically she banged her way to the top. Because she banged all the first officer who eventually became the captain, who she eventually killed.
They should just do... I feel like if you want to get into a, like, whore... not a whore.
If you want to get into a whore, all you got to do is go about 60 miles outside of Vegas and pay for it.
I meant a horror-esque Star Trek. I feel like they could do a Star Trek Mirror Universe miniseries or limited series or maybe even just a short 2 or 3 season run.
Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting. They did that with different comic book series.
And that would be good. I don't know how we got so far off topic, but it's also a very interesting topic. I think we should see a Star Trek Mirror Universe series.
I don't think it's really off topic, given that that's kind of what the direction of the show looks like it's going in.
True. Yeah. And, you know, it could be setting up to where the back half of the season is somewhat in the Mirror Universe. Saying that because I know something. Spoiler alert, but that's supposed to come before I say anything. Anyways.
Yeah, but the show's already been out. So, I mean, you've had plenty of time.
It's been 3 years. You've had three years to avoid that spoiler. So this one's on you if you get spoiled.
We're trying our best not to give too much, but just go watch the show. Come on.
For real. Oh, okay. This reminded me. Okay, I'm looking at CBS All Access, and I'm looking at the thumbnail for episode 9, which is what we're talking about. So Brenham and Tyler beam onto the ship, and they have these devices on them that kind of looks like an Iron Man chess piece because they have this little glowing light in the center.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But what it is, it's a device to kind of fool the sensors of the ship. So to answer what you were saying earlier about how the Klingons haven't recognized Admiral Cornwallis, I know that's not her name, but I'm sticking with it.
I think that was your question earlier.
No, it was, well, your statement. How have the Klingons not detected her life sign? And you said maybe the ship doesn't have the ability to do that. They're wearing these suits to fool the sensors into thinking that they're actually Klingon life signs.
Oh, that's interesting. But that's another technology you would think you would have seen or see more often in the Star Trek universe.
Right. But it reminded me of the Orville episode where they did the same thing. Seth MacFarlane and someone else had to board an enemy ship, and they were wearing these devices, but instead it made a hologram around them, so they physically looked like Klingons.
Right.
Or their equivalent to the Klingons.
Yeah, what was that species? I don't remember the name Krill. Of it. Oh, yeah, that's it. Which?
I love Orville. I think I retain more information from the Orville than I do Star Trek. And I've only seen that show twice.
Oh, well, I mean, I retain more information from the OG Star Trek, then.
But I don't know,
Orville's pretty damn great, too.
I think somewhere down the line, they should have these suits to fool enemy sensors, but make it like the Orville to where you're looking at what you think is a Klingon. That would be cool.
But it's a hologram.
Yeah. I mean, so this would have to be like Next Generation era or later. I mean, you can't do it now because they didn't have that tech, but.
Right. Because they still just did surgical alterations, honestly. I mean, they just surgically just change. They did that. That was in several episodes. Hell, that was in Tribble in Paradise. Was it Tribble in Paradise, the name of it?
I don't remember. But I do remember.
Because the bad guy was Klingon, who was surgically altered, and they found out because Tribbles hate Klingons. So. Hmm.
Interesting.
Yep. Tribble saved the day.
So, episode 9, what'd you think of it?
Wasn't bad. I mean, I think 8 was a little bit better than 9, so it, you know, peaked and then dropped a little bit, and then I'm curious to see how this cliffhanger is going to go, because it's obvious that they tried to make this cliffhanger for that mid-season finale, which seems like a weird time to have a mid-season finale, given it's not halfway through the season.
Yeah, it's more than halfway through.
Yeah, it's like a three-quarters finale.
Kind of, yeah. Two-thirds.
Two-thirds. Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there. 9/15, if you want to be technical.
No. Yeah. Jesus. All right, Mr. Technical.
Just saying. We're on episode 9 of 15.
It wasn't bad. Wasn't great. Probably this one, 7 out of 10 as well. I think 8, probably 8.5 out of 10. So I think this one was just...
I think overall, it went back, out of the three parts we have done so far, this is probably the best part. So the best three episodes we've seen. I'm looking back at the thumbnails, trying to see some of the other ones.
I don't know.
Part 2 was pretty good too.
I don't know. They're trying to build on this relationship between Brenham and
Tyler.
Tyler, and I don't know how I like that. Now, granted, 8, it was better because that just makes sense. You know, officers boinking on an away mission, it's no different than anything else in Star Trek.
Wait, when did they boink on an away mission in 8?
Well, they didn't boink, but they made out or they kissed. You know, they...
Oh.
The progression of the relationship developed a lot more in 8. We didn't really talk about it. And then...
Well, because you know, you find out they like each other in 7, and then they kiss and have a dance and everything, but they forget all that because of the time loops.
Yeah, and then they do it in 8. And then did they not boink at the end of... Was it 8 or was it 9? There was one of them where...
Oh, speaking of boinking... Well, because Ash Tyler goes and visits the L'Oreal in prison, or in the brig, and he's having flashbacks. He had flashbacks of the two of them having sex. So we got your nudity for this series. There it was. You saw a Klingon naked.
Yeah, you got to see some Klingon titties. Now, she got some big old titties, but still, it wasn't the kind of titties I was looking forward to seeing.
First swear words in a Star Trek, and then you see some, I guess technically it's Klingon raping him.
Yeah, technically.
But yeah, this show has been weird because, I mean, they've cursed, you see some alien nudity.
They're trying to break some barriers. It's very adult. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to give you some perspective, the episode 7 with Harry Mudd is rated TV-14, while 8 and 9 are TVMA.
Yeah, T and 9 was TVMA for sex and violence because of that.
Yeah,
sex
and it's T. Yeah, it's yep. Sex and violence, TVMA for episode 12, 11, and then TVMA for violence in episode 10. So. Interesting stuff coming up.
You know, I have a feeling that the one Star Trek nerd who was writing or part of the writing staff for this show is like, come on, they constantly tease Klingon titties all the time, but we never get to see them. Let's at least see them once. And that's why they wrote it in, you know, because you go back to any like prominent Klingon female and all they got is
they got very low cut armor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they're very sexualized in previous series.
Oh, well, I mean, they're a very sexual species. I mean, especially true. Female Klingons.
True.
And then also, that looked nothing like how Klingons have sex. Like, it's very violent and aggressive. That's just...
Well...
That was just sex.
It was a very violent flashback, so...
And it's true.
He could only be remembering the good parts of his, I mean, technical rape.
Yeah, that's true. And for those who don't know, women can rape men.
Yeah.
It's not beyond the realm of possibility.
Nope. Nope. It's definitely not common, I don't think, but it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bold move for Star Trek to be having this kind of... Now that I think about it, it's really bold, and it's very questionable to have that kind of scene.
You could tell they were swinging big and hoping to hit a home run, but they ended up hitting a foul ball, and... I don't know if they were able to save it.
I don't remember any, like, I don't recall backlash from the scene or anyone like being up in arms because it's played as a sex scene versus a.
Well, I don't think, I think that this is, that scene is not going to be what created this the backlash from the series. There's plenty of other stuff for the backlash.
Well, yeah, but.
But the scene would not have make or break the show. It was more of a just kind of a throw in and push some boundaries, but just as more of it's different than what Star Trek normally has done from the past. But
well, yeah, I mean, but like I said, if it was a sex scene, yeah, okay, they're not going to get backlash. But if it's a how we're describing it as more of a rape scene, then where it was or a non-consensual scene, well, then.
Well, I mean, it was 3 years ago. A lot's changed in the last 3 years.
I mean, we're not always PC, but...
Yeah, this was
a very sensitive subject.
Well, this was 2017, so this was the pre-Kavanaugh hearings. So, I mean, this was before the I don't want to say
Me Too movement.
Yeah,
this was right around the time of it.
This was just before the Me Too movement, because the Me Too movement sparked mostly around Kavanaugh. So, you know, I mean, it was it's amazing how much times have changed in just the last 3 years, 4 years, I guess technically now.
I just think about it. We'll see how much of this I keep in, because, like I said, it's a very PC thing, and I would rather not get shit for.
Yeah, I'm curious how they do that when airing it, because they're airing it on CBS, so I wonder if they just kind of left that scene out or not.
That's a good point. That would tell us a lot. I don't know.
I mean, they would, I think they would, because it's 2021. Oh man, that's going to take some getting used to. I mean, you know, lots changed in this last year, so you never know. And I think they started releasing them this year, so
yeah, I have to do some research and figure that out.
Yeah, well, we'll take a look. We'll see what we can find out. Yeah. Got a lot of research to do for this next episode. I need to watch, see if I can find that Harry Mudd episode.
Yeah.
Should we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Punch it, Huxley!
Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here!
Let's punch it.
So, what do we have to look forward to for next week, brother?
Well, we're going to continue our discussion on Star Trek Discovery with our part four of the season one discussion, which is episodes 10, 11, and 12. Entitled Despite Yourself, The Wolf Inside, and Vaulting Ambition. So we'll be checking out those three episodes of Star Trek Discovery. They are the, I guess, technically mid-season premiere. It's basically the start of the second half, throwing up air quotes since it's not technically half, of season one.
Yep. All right. So, well, I mean, we're almost through season one. We're moving through pretty quickly. Two-thirds of the way through.
Three-fifths.
Right. Three-fifths. Yeah. Okay. It's close enough. Oh, you know what?
This is why we don't like fractions.
No, we do not do fractions.
No. Fractions are not our friends. Anyways, I think that'll do it for this episode of Deep Space High. Thank you, everyone, for checking out this episode. And be sure to join us next time for our part four conversation on Star Trek Discovery.
And don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High. And don't forget to follow and like our Facebook page at Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews and our Instagram at Deep Space High Podcast to stay up to date on the latest announcements.
Yeah, and don't forget the hashtag Tacos and Trek either.
Oh, yeah. Tacos and Trek.
Also, we would like everyone to go ahead and leave us a review and a rating. Please, 5 stars only. If you got something negative to say, find us on Facebook and Twitter and reach out to us. But go ahead and leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. That way we can get our show out there. We can attract more listeners and make this a nice, big podcast. I'm one of your hosts. I almost said Sky Marshal Steve, but I am Jedi Master Steve.
And I am Sky Marshal Chris. And don't forget, live long and prosper.